So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, and welcome to 90 Day Fiancé MK. I'm Mr. O, and today, Ms. H and I will be discussing the Season 8, Episode 9 of Happily Ever After. In this episode, Patrick abandons Thais at the end of her birthday, Ashley and Manuel both don't think they're being listened to, Lauren is really loopy after her surgery, Sophie and Rob go to therapy together, Jasmine gets a lot of confidence from her pageant workshop, Emily's mom doesn't like the whole bride price thing, and Ed tries to let Liz go as easy as he can. We'll be back again next week to talk about episode 10, and we're also back on our other channel, Love After Lockup MK, covering the new season of Love During Lockup. Alright, thanks for listening, stay safe, and enjoy!
Mr. O.
Hello, Miss H.
How are you today?
I've been better. Hopefully it's not too sniffy and coffee on people's podcast today, but I'm a little a little bit of a cold that I'm closing the school year out with. So that's always fun.
Oh, wonderful. Yes. Great way to start the summer. So it's not quite summertime, but it's definitely hot down in Brazil. So let's talk about Patrick and Thais. Thais is actually annoyed with Patrick because John is coming and Patrick is going to stay with him, even though it's still Thais's birthday. They fight in the car over the fact that Patrick did not ask Thais's dad for a blessing. And Patrick defends his actions, saying that he hasn't seen the guy in 2 years. And to show up with a baby and then just ask for it, it just didn't seem authentic. Thais says that her dad asked for an apology, so the least he could have done was shown a little humility. They get to the apartment and Thais is struggling to get the baby in the car seat as well as handling their dog and getting the luggage. And Patrick can't seem to help much because his leg is still in a brace from his knee surgery. They're both clearly agitated with one another as Thais tells him to take the dog for the night because that's his kid too. So I think the dog ended up staying with Thais. It was kind of hard to tell. The dog is small.
Yeah.
And Patrick hobbles back out to the car. And that was pretty much all we saw from them. So I don't know. That are you Team Thais or Team Patrick when it comes to where he should have spent this night?
Generally with your wife is probably right.
On her birthday specifically?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, pick your brother up from the airport, drop him off at the hotel.
Yeah.
See you tomorrow, buddy. Like,
right.
That seems much more reasonable to than I'm going to hang out with my bro, like, on your birthday. So birthday is over now, officially over. It is now 8:30. Your birthday is done. Bye.
Right. Also, it just seemed like he was kind of putting it back on her, like, well, you seem mad and you just need your space. And it's like, yeah, she's mad because you're abandoning her on her birthday.
She's mad because you're giving her the space on her birthday. Yes.
Right.
Not even taking the kid. Like, just leaving her with the kid and the dog and just being like, peace. Like,
yeah.
Which means definitely thinks it out. So you're going to, on my birthday, dump me with the kid, the dog, by myself so you can go out and have fun with your brother. Because that's what I feel like is going to happen. And that's like, that's even worse.
Yeah. In addition to not trying to smooth things over with my dad, because I think that's what she was upset about.
And I think he has a point, but still isn't completely justified in what he's doing. Like,
right.
I do think it is dumb if somebody's like, well, you should apologize to me and ask for my blessing. If you do it right then, it seems inauthentic.
Yeah.
Right? And he very well could have thrown it right back in his face and be like, you're just doing that because I said to.
Right.
I feel like he should have split the difference and definitely apologized because he can. It doesn't necessarily mean it's inauthentic to be like, oh man, I'm sorry this went the way it went. And I could have gotten your blessing beforehand. And, you know, the situation was whatever different. You can make excuses or whatever, but you can still – he never said the words, I'm sorry or I apologize.
Right.
And those could have came out even if he wasn't going to turn that into directly asking for a blessing right now. And, you know, he's going to quote unquote earn it or whatever he's going to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they were a quick couple. We just kind of almost checked in with them. Nothing new really happened.
Yeah. So I'm going to go to the one that was the most disturbing one, disturbing enough that it needed a warning on the screen. So
I was covering my eyes like pretty much the entire time.
Yeah,
it was
just
so
warned
gross.
On the screen that there's going to be graphic footage of a surgery, and we get graphic footage of a surgery. Like, that is 100% what we got. So while Lexi talks about his feelings and calls her mom Marlene to let her know that the surgery started, you know, neither of them are really enthusiastic about it, but there's no turning back now. Like, she's already under. So he says everybody's on edge, is going to be on edge until they know the surgery is a success. And then 2 hours in, someone comes out for an update and they tell him the lipo is done and the fat injections are starting. Everything's going fine. And then there's just more waiting, more graphic footage. They just keep going back and forth between Alexei waiting, Lauren's skin being cut open, Alexei waiting, like Lauren being sutured. It's like,
it was the fat coming out that grossed me out. It looked like a smoothie. It was disgusting. And then
they
had
the fat. They like transferred the fat from one from the sucker outer to the putter inner, and it was like, oh god, why are we watching this? So anyway, we come back for the next scene, and there were 4 hours in then, and still seeing the inside of Lauren's body. So they play some silly music because I thought they were playing silly music because Alexei got food, and I was like, well, of course he has to eat. It's a 5 hour surgery, but it wasn't Alexei got food. It was Lauren that ordered the food before she went under, so that she would have it when she woke up. So after 5 hours, they're wrapping up in the operating room. Then the doctor comes out to talk to Alexei, tells him everything went well, and Lauren is awake and then in the recovery room, and now he can go back to see her. So he warns Alexei that she's still going to be in pain for a while, and there's also something involving some breathing machine that she needs to learn how to use because they tightened everything up around, so she has to like use her muscles to expand her chest. So he's glad the surgery is over, but that turns out to have been the easy part. So he comes in and she just like is looking at him. Her face is bandaged up. She's got bandages on her head. She's just like, I did it. And just keeps shivering and shivering. And also asking like, are my boobs big? Like, did they do a good job?
She was so hilarious.
She was very funny. She tells him she's like, I feel like a fucking truck hit me. But, you know, am I snatched?
Like, oh, gosh, she's so funny.
And she's also like, I see three of you. So he's glad she's doing well enough to make jokes, but knows that once the medication wears off, it's going to be a tough go. So the parents are watching the kids for the first night, and it's a pretty big effort just to get her into the car. So they're recovering. She's recovering for the first night in a close by hotel because I think they're in Miami and they don't want to drive all the way back up to Hollywood. So they're in Hollywood, I think. And Alex is worried about how this is all going to go. So, I mean, I guess if you had to come off of surgery, which is the worst thing to have? To either have that longer car ride or to have to sleep in a hotel bed?
I think the long car ride. I don't know if I'd be too bothered by sleeping in a hotel bed. You know, like as long as it's comfortable. It's,
but they're never comfortable. They're hotel beds, by definition, uncomfortable beds.
I am comfortable enough in probably over half. I would say 75% of the hotel beds I've ever stayed in have been okay. 25% are like, oh, okay. In Asia, that is the worst place for hotel beds because they're basically like wooden planks with a thin layer of something over
them. That's what
I hate that.
I don't like hotel beds because I fall into them and I'm like, why am I in a cloud falling through the sky? I don't understand.
See, I would prefer that. So, I mean, that's fine. The wooden planks with a thin layer of fabric on the top, that's the one where
I can deal with that. I can deal with that. Yeah, I had to do that for a long – I slept on the floor when I hurt my back. Like, I could take that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, you would really like Asian countries then. The first day I was like, how much would it cost for me to get an Amazon like mattress pad shipped here? The answer to that is very expensive and not worth it. You just have to survive the hard beds. Yeah. She was hilarious. I really like Alexei. He's just so even and, kind of going along with everything. He's very go with the flow. But yeah, not a whole lot going on here except for really gross graphic images that seemed really unnecessary.
Yeah, I mean, I could have just done with her coming out of anesthesia, which is always a wild ride when people are coming out of anesthesia because I've never been put under for full anesthesia before.
Yeah.
I've been sedated, not general anesthesia, but I've, been to recovery rooms where people are coming out and they are just wild. Like, they have no idea what's going on. You're talking really slow and be like, okay, I need you to sit up. Are you going to sit up? It's time to sit up. And then you try to help him sit up. And they're like, what are we doing? Why are you? It's like wild.
No, the look she was giving him, like her eyes are all bugged out of her head. It was so funny. Yeah. Okay, so moving from them to maybe not so funny. All the ones I had to cover were so serious.
Yeah.
there isn't even like a less serious one. I'll just start with Ashley Manuel. So Manuel is calling Jonathan saying that something happened, but he needs him to buy him a beer and some food because if you recall, the something is that they got in a fight and Ashley was refusing to give Manuel his money. So they meet up and talk about the fight that, you know, he had just had with Ashley, and Jonathan is hoping to help both of them work it out. So he wants to hear her side. So much later in the day, they invite Ashley out to talk to them. Jonathan encourages a greeting and not to be so cold with one another. Ashley says that she'll be warm if he warms up. She's tired of hearing that she's the problem. Jonathan says that he's neutral, but he has heard Manuel's side and would like to hear her side. She says that he doesn't respect her feelings or talk to her. Manuel didn't want to tell her where he was going because he knows her and her reaction, which is to ask a lot of questions and demand proof of his whereabouts, like photos and things. He thinks it's just best not to tell her anything and just leave. And she has tears in her eyes and she just says no. Jonathan says this shit is a mess. Ashley cries and says that she's in pain because of how he acts. Jonathan says that he wants her to trust him just as Manuel trusts her, and she just cries and shakes her head. He says that what else can he do if she doesn't trust him, and Manuel walks away. He says that she is so dramatic. Ashley says that she wants him to have friends in this country. She feels bad about being in Rochester where there aren't many people who speak Spanish. Manuel says that she will never accept mistakes and Jonathan will get nowhere with her. He thinks the marriage could be over. Ashley doesn't think that she has anything to apologize for. Jonathan says that if they can't try to see eye to eye, that all of this is going to be a waste of time. Manuel then comes back and asks if this conversation is over because there is nothing left to say. Manuel says that he did nothing wrong, so he has nothing to apologize for. Ashley says that she's done while Manuel gives a disingenuous apology going, sorry for everything because everything is my fault. Ashley says that she doesn't want a divorce, but she does want a healthy relationship. Jonathan insists that they are both wrong because they are not listening to one another. He says that they don't trust one another. Ashley tells Manuel to get in the car and Manuel scoffs and says that this is how his wife talks to him. Ashley tells us that she's not dealing with this Manuel in Rochester. All right. So, you know, Jonathan says they're both wrong. Both of them say they're not wrong at all. Uh-huh. So what do you think that they're both guilty of?
So I think it's funny because what I noticed is that they both literally said the same thing.
Yeah,
they both
exactly.
said, I guess everything's my fault. Right. Both of them said that sarcastically. Right.
Right.
And what that tells me is that Jonathan's not really wrong. Mm-hmm. They both are really upset that the other person isn't listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
And their response is to not listen to the other person. Right. Like they do not listen to each other and then complain that they're not being heard. Right?
Right.
And it's like, well, if you want to be heard, you have to listen. Like, mm-hmm. and that's kind of been my beef with, and they're both similar. They're both stubborn in their way of like, well, I'm not going to apologize till he apologizes. And they play apology chicken and, you know, it just doesn't work. But they both want to say their piece and have the other person just be like – because they also kind of mistake being heard and being listened to with being agreed with.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see what you're saying. That's right. You're right. I will do that now. Right?
Yeah.
Whereas like – sometimes they say it and sometimes they are being heard and sometimes the other person does listen and they say, nah, that's dumb. I don't agree with that. And then they check that up to be instead of being different or instead of having different expectations, then the other person just didn't listen.
Right.
You know?
Right. I think it's interesting, like what you were saying about them saying the same thing is that if you were to ask them what is wrong, they would both say, well, they don't trust me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's so interesting because it's like, and they always say, I want them to trust me the way I trust them. And it's like, do y'all trust each other?
Yeah. I mean, it is definitely that different definition of trust they're going with, right?
Yeah.
She means trust me, meaning tell me everything. And he's like, my God, won't you shut up? Right? It's like, and so she just doesn't, you see, that doesn't mean the same thing to him. And like... And to be fair, he gets, as annoying as she was to me in the last episode, and she was being childish in the last episode.
Oh,
the
yeah, whole, like, for sure.
I'm not talking to you. I'm not talking to you. I'm not talking to you.
He's like, give me money and keys. And yeah. She's like, I'm not talking to you. I can't give you money and keys if I'm not listening. La, 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 la.
Then we turned around at this episode and he was just being nasty.
Yeah.
Like, he just had nasty things to say.
Right. I mean, they do. They're just not a good couple. I mean, that's really what it is at the end of the day. And it's like he just doesn't get along with her personality, you know, because the reality is that he's annoyed by her.
Yes.
He's annoyed with all her questions. He's annoyed with her, you know, wanting to know where he is all the time, wanting him to justify his actions. He's annoyed that she needs, like, location, you know, shared.
I mean, that would be annoying to to be fair, I would be annoyed too if I texted my partner, hey, I went out to breakfast with my buddy, and she was like, share your location.
Yeah.
That is means you don't trust me. Like, there's no other way around that. That means you don't think I'm where I say I was.
But like, I don't think the answer to that is to then be shady and not say anything
right.
to, you know, build trust. It's like what you're doing is just making things worse, you know. And so I just think like they're just not compatible people, because if he's not willing to put in some work to really build that trust, you know, because he can't be bothered because he's too annoyed by all the requests.
No, but you can't live your whole life every time you go out texting a picture with a selfie with the person you said you're with to prove that you're there.
Yeah, like, but she would be perfectly happy with that.
She would not do that. I don't think she would do that for him. I think she would.
No,
she expects it of him, but would not do that for him. Yeah. Oh no, I'm saying from Manuel's perspective, from the person who has to take that picture, right? That's incredibly burdensome and incredibly invasive, and like. That's not what a trusting relationship looks like, right? And so, I mean, they have such different expectations of what a relationship should be and what a good relationship looks like that I don't see how they can stay together.
Yeah, I have no idea.
All right, so more people. Let's go people who also probably shouldn't be together. Jasmine and Gino. So Jasmine is on her way to the beauty pageant workshop and is worried about not having. Something about an alligator smile. She's like, oh, I want to not have an alligator smile because they saw the alligators last time. So Gino's coming with, and it's weird to me because he's the only significant other that's at the workshop.
Right.
And the only guy that's at the workshop just sitting there doing his weird little thing. So the woman running the whole thing is a friend of Leandro, and she starts off by introducing the other women in the workshop. So none of them seem to be worried or care that Gino is sticking around. Well, except for Jasmine, who kind of in an interview says, like, if you look at any of the other women, I will gouge out your eyes.
God.
So anyway, Jasmine, the first question they say, are there any questions? And she's like, is there an age limit? Because, you know, I'm 37 and, you know, I might be past the age for this. And, you know, and turns out she's not even the oldest one there. There's a woman there who's like, I am 42. A woman never tells her age, but I'm 42. So anyway. Then Jasmine goes on about her body image issues and how, especially with her alopecia, that makes her feel bad about stuff, about her body. And before long, she has everybody in the whole workshop. Literally, they gather around her and kneel in front of her, like patting on her knees and being like, oh, you're so pretty. You're so beautiful. As she just cries. So we did not get through an episode with Jasmine not crying this time. So then it's time to work on their runway walks, which they do like. It's Jasmine's turn to go first, and she gets up there. Instead of just doing the walk, they're like, let's put the crown and sash on you. And then she like cries again because she really loves this whole thing. She's in queen mode, she says. And they go back, and they're back at Leandro's place for her birthday cookout. And Jasmine's putting together what she calls Jasmaritas, which is she claims it's her own spin on a margarita, but just seems to be tequila
really.
And ice just in a pina cup. Like just a full glass of tequila that she crushes the ice in. Maybe a splash of margarita mix. That's it. So Gino tells her, well, at least tries to tell her happy birthday in Spanish and doesn't quite do it right because he ends up accidentally telling her that she has 37 asses because he said anos instead of años. So Gino gets the grilling and Jasmine talks to Leandro about the pageant workshop. And Leandro brings up maybe participating in the pageant. But Gino is concerned. Well, what happens when you get pregnant? Then you'll have to drop out of the pageant. And that makes Jasmine feel pretty bad because she's not trying to get pregnant right now and she hasn't told him that. So she feels bad telling him that. And I can't argue with her logic here, honestly, because if he knows that she's not being to be pregnant, he's going to turn into a giant asshole. And he's been really nice recently.
Yeah, because he's trying to get her pregnant.
Yeah. So anyway, they go back to the cookout and she's tells him, I'm not on the same page. And he's like, what do you mean not on the same page? And then she isn't ready to have the baby right now. So Gino asks if this means she doesn't want to have a baby at all. And she doesn't know the answer to that. So he's upset that she made this decision without discussing their options with him. And she just decided on behalf of both of them. So then he just is tired of all this and goes off to bed because he doesn't want to deal with this anymore. So I got to this and I was like, that part inexplicably, maybe you can get to the bottom. That part grossed me out when he was like, well, you just made this decision for us. And I was like, that's how it works, right? If you're she has final say over whether she gets pregnant or not.
Yeah, she definitely does. And I mean, we've kind of seen that she does. Remember when we first met them, how she decided to be on birth control and not tell him.
Right.
You're like, really? What? I mean, at least she's being like communicative about her decision this time around. But she has been making this decision. But I understand. I have a little bit of empathy where he's coming from because he wants to have a family. He is marrying this person to have a family with her. And so for her to just kind of change her mind, I can see how it feels unfair, but it still doesn't make it his decision.
Right. Yeah, no, he's allowed to be disappointed. Like, sure. He's allowed to feel lost that this thing he thought was going to happen isn't going to happen anymore. It's just part of that is just is at the end of the day, she was deciding for them either way. Like, he's already made his decision, right? His decision is clear. She was always the one that was deciding, right? And she just but they changed her mind. But and like I said, I don't really. I mean, when she explained her reasoning, because usually like, oh my god, you can't lie to your partner. But I'm like, no, he's a much better partner. He's been a much better partner since he thought this was going to happen, and he's going to be a raging asshole from now. Like, it's going to be terrible.
Because he's going to – in this is what I don't understand. Like, he's going to be a raging asshole because I think there's going to be some level of consciousness of trying to sabotage this relationship because it's like, why would you want to be with someone or continue this thing when they're not going to be able to help you get the things that you want in life, in this case, meaning a family, right? And so I think there is a part of him that probably wants it to be over so that way he can find someone who would want to have a family with him. And so, you know, I think he's going to be a raging asshole, just as you said. And but I think he should be mature enough at this age. And, you know, you hear those people who are like, oh, this is my last chance at love, or this is my last chance at a family, you know, things like that. But he really should be real and say, is this something that I can live or live without? And if it's something, if a family is something that I can't live without, then I need to like be proactive about this, divorce this person, and find someone that I can have a family with. That would be the mature thing to do, but I just don't see that happening.
No, he's not going to do that. Absolutely not. Like, if it's a deal breaker, it's a deal breaker, right? And it's like, but he keeps, oftentimes we've seen him, he's in this predicament because he keeps taking maybe for an answer. And he kept taking maybe for an answer for a long time. Instead of like, he was like, I want to have kids. And she was like, I can't tell you for sure, maybe. And he was like, sounds like a yes to me. And now it's like, that wasn't a yes. That was never a yes. It was a yes for like 3 seconds, right? Before she found out her kids couldn't get here, right? And that was it. Like, other than that, she's been a pretty consistent, I'm not sure that I want any more kids. And has been pretty explicit about that. And so this is a decision that could have gotten made years ago.
Yeah, I'm actually a little surprised that because Jasmine, she's kind of manipulative like this. I'm kind of surprised she didn't throw it in his face, like kind of turn around and be like, well, if, you know, you had done the right thing and got my kids over here, then I would be open to, you know, having a child, because then I wouldn't be feeling like I'm abandoning my kids.
And replacing them. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And like, honestly, like, I'm really shocked she didn't play that card, because she could have turned it around on him and kind of put this decision more like, you have a part to play in my decision here. Because I really do think she does feel that way, you know, mm-hmm. like she doesn't want to have a whole new family to replace the family that she already has, even though Gino kind of does want that, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that seems explicitly what he wants. Mm-hmm. But you said the manipulative stuff, and that just made me remember the first scene where she literally had all of those pageant girls like just in her fingers, just like,
yeah,
how can I get these beautiful women to all kneel on the ground in front of me and call me beautiful? Yeah. Like she got that done.
Like, yeah. Yeah. I actually was feeling pretty good. Like it was, I don't want to necessarily say inspirational, but it was such a positive, like wholesome, like, oh, you know, like look at these women being so supportive, and like, you know, her talking about her low self-esteem and, you know, getting this really positive experience out of it. And it kind of, it just gave me the feel goods, right?
Yeah. You know what? The other person I noticed was, it seemed like last year's winner was there, mm-hmm. and like just chilling. And I was like, that seems like an awful job. Like, yeah. And I know that because that Miss USA and Miss Teen USA literally just quit. Right? Right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I was like, well, I would quit too if every Tuesday they were like, yeah, you got to go to this random office hall and sit around while a bunch of women cry and walk. And you have to sit mm-hmm. there in your crown and sash. How often do I have to do that? Every, like, you got to do that like 5 days a week. And then in yeah. between, you got to like, how am I getting there? You got to buy your own flight. Like, those are the kind of things I'm imagining that life is like. I was like, that does sound awful.
Right, right. All right, let's move on to our next couple, and that's Sophie and Rob. So Sophie and Rob are on their way to see a therapist. Finally. So Sophie says that she looked for the Ho phone again after Rob went to bed and found nothing. She doesn't want to accuse him of having another phone when she really has no proof, so she's just keeping her suspicions to herself for now. Their therapist, Velka, asks them to tell their story, and Rob defers to Sophie because he claims he always does the talking. Rob says that he liked how beautiful and down-to-earth Sophie was, and Sophie forgets Rob's age when they're kind of telling their story, which Rob thinks is proof that Sophie just doesn't really care about him. Sophie talks about their differences, like she wants to go out and he's more of a homebody. She also says that she just has trust issues that she resents him for. Rob is upset that, once again, even though it seems like the perfect place to bring it up.
Where else would you bring it up? Like, therapy. This is what you came here for. Yes.
She brings up the online cheating thing so quickly. Sophie says that they don't have a sex life. And Sophie says that it's partially her fault because she has a mental block. And he wants her to dress up. And he wants it because he says it's for him. He thinks that she should dress up as Velma from Scooby-Doo. He's not into Daphne. He's also thinking French maid costume. Rob says that they haven't had sex in so long that she should be the one to instigate it. Sophie says that the types of women he was pursuing online, it made her feel self-conscious because they didn't look like her. Rob is offended by this statement because he thinks it makes him seem wild for her to accuse him of being into bodybuilder type women. Velka sees the wheels coming off and tries to get Rob to focus, but he keeps interrupting even her attempts to steer the conversation. Sophie defends what she said in the interview, saying that the women all post ass shots, and Rob says he thinks of it as fitness inspiration. She tells him to stop lying and that he just needs to quit defending himself and making it about something else and just really apologize. You know, she doesn't care if it's bodybuilding women or other women. She just cares that he's like obsessing about other women's pictures. Velka says that change is hard when there's anger and resentment. She wants to validate Rob and says that there is a lot of judgment around sex, so she understands why Rob got a little bit defensive about the bodybuilder types. Rob says that when he watches porn, he likes mainstream porn, and he likes people with Sophie's body type. Velka says that the hard work is to express vulnerability. Sophie says that she brings up the online cheating because she's looking for reassurance, but not necessarily to make him feel bad. She feels like he doesn't say nice things to her and make her feel wanted sexually. Rob says he thinks she's the most beautiful person in the world, but their lack of intimacy has made it harder for him to put himself out there and say the nice things that she wants to hear. The therapist challenges him to say something nice, and he says some nice things that let Sophie know she's attractive, which makes her smile. Velka then tells him that he has to be intentional, even if it is uncomfortable. Sophie giggles when Rob is basically talking dirty to her. Sophie says that, okay, she's like coming around. Maybe she will dress up like a bunny like he wants. She just wants to know that he's also trying to make her happy. The therapist says that their biggest challenge is opening up to each other after the things that have happened in the past, and that, she says, love is not enough. So, which goes against what a lot of these couples say, right?
Right,
we need is love. We'll figure everything else out.
We just got to work on it. We have love. We just need to work.
Oh, gosh, yeah. So what did you think of their therapy session? Did you think it was productive in a way that they'll make progress? Or do you think it's just them kind of spinning their wheels or saying the stuff and then kind of going back?
Yeah, it seemed like it was Rob saying the stuff and maybe Sophie saying the stuff that she's supposed to say. Like, oh, there it is. That's nice. Mm-hmm. But it was like, I feel like it was too shallowly focused on sex the whole time. Like they both kind of had that. When relationships are broken, sometimes people are just like, well, if we fix the sex, we'll fix the relationship. And that's not true. And like, so it seemed like they were just trying to get that part of it back on track where that's more of a symptom than the whole thing. But I don't know. It just seems like he's not going to keep doing that. He's not going to keep because to be fair to him, he seems very uncomfortable. And I understand this because I don't. Like, I would feel really awkward saying those things even to my partner, right? Mm-hmm. I can show my partner that I think they're attractive and I'm still into them in other ways, right? But, like, him being like, the damn, you know what I want to do to you? Like, I'm not doing that. That's weird. That feels gross to me, right? So that's not happening. And if that's the way – if that's the specific way she wants affection to be shown and she wants to be – but it wasn't even – that's what I'm saying. That's why I said it was shallowly focused on sex because it wasn't even affection. It was just – I want to know that you want to be with physically be with me, sexually be with me and not sexually be with other women.
Yeah, I think what I kind of see as being the issue is that Rob doesn't want to do anything. Right. And I think this has kind of come out like before. And what I mean by not do anything, I don't mean that he doesn't want to work on the relationship, but I mean, like, he's the one who wants to feel wanted. Right. He's the one who, like, I imagine that dude just lays there while sex is happening to him. You know,
he's the male starfish. Huh?
Right. Like, he just seems like a real lazy lover. Like, he wants all the good feelings, but he doesn't care about trying to give those to other people. Right. And so even like when they were talking about instigating sex, I don't see why I should have to. She's the one been rejecting me this entire time. So she's got to be the one to start it up.
I don't disagree with that in terms of like, I do feel like if it's a healthy relationship, which this is not, right, that in a relationship, I feel like I've heard people have, they call it the 48-hour rule, where it's like if one partner tries to initiate and it doesn't, and the other person's not into it, right, they have 48 hours to do it, to initiate themselves.
Okay.
Right? And or people have like the 3 times rule where it's like if I try to initiate 3 times, then it's on the other person to initiate now.
Like, well, I feel like that's how you end up having sex droughts.
Maybe. Well, I mean, but I also understand it's like, I also get it if it's like, well, how many times are we going to try this and get rejected? 20, 30, 40?
Well, honestly, the real answer is you have a conversation about why the rejection is happening.
Right. Yeah. And you have to be honest with each other and open.
Right.
And because if they don't tell you why, I'm just always really tired. Like, I just don't feel like it when you start. Like, then So when do you feel like it? And it's like, but if generally the sex droughts happen because there's something else that's the reason you're constantly being rejected and you haven't resolved that issue yet, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's really what it is. And in this case, it's this weird sex thing, the sexting online cheating stuff that he just keeps insisting she should just get over. But I would say this. I have had before this episode, I had no suspicions that Rob had a bodybuilder kink. And now I'm almost sure that Rob has a bodybuilder kink.
I didn't even know that was a thing, but I wasn't like judgy about it. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, that's just what he's into.
I was like, it's not my thing, but okay. That's your type. Like the bodybuilder, I'm like, athletic, whatever, is different. But like the fact that he was just like, ew, gross, how dare you.
He was so defensive.
He was so defensive. I was like, this guy seems like he's really into this. Like, doesn't want anybody to know it.
It was very weird. Like, yeah, it seemed really defensive. Like, what are you hiding?
Yeah. Like, I also kind of want to know, what other ones would trigger you like this? Can we talk about like, what if she mentioned feet? Would he go off like that too? Like, what is it? He's like, no, I just watch normal porn. Just regular stuff.
Well, like, I could see if she was like, oh, you're into like man, lady threesomes. Like, I feel like he would get very offended about that too.
Yeah, he probably would. Mm-hmm. Which I think that seems like a weird one to be offended by. But like,
whatever.
So it's a bodybuilder one. Like, okay. They make it because people like it.
Yeah, but to me, it's like, why are you getting offended over that? I don't know.
It was very, very weird. And it did like, even the therapist was like, you're interrupting me. You're interrupting me.
Right.
You have to stop. No. Because she was just there trying to be like, oh my God, don't get canceled. The cameras are here. You're going to say something terrible. Like,
yeah.
Oh, it's going to go awful. All right. So last up for me is Emily and Kobe. So Emily and Kobe are trying to work their way through a busy, rainy market. So his family is doing the traditional knock ceremony, like where his parents will come ask her parents for their list of demands for this wedding to happen. So also, Emily is going to be making a Cameroonian meal for them. So she thinks she can pull it off, but it's going to be a little more difficult than the meatloaf she makes at home. So as long as they get the ingredients now at this market, Kobe's sister is going to be around to help Emily out to actually prepare the meal. So they get back and Emily's mom, Lisa, wants to see all the exotic things they got at the market. And that's when Kobe pulls out the cow skin that they got. So then she marvels at it and talks about how it smells and like tries to touch it. And then they go out to see if Emily's mom, Dave, can guess what it is. And he can't. He's just like, I don't know, some sort of weird gooey taco. I don't know. What is that? So then Kobe's sister, Franca, gets there and her and Emily share a really big hug. And Franca has brought over some chicken feet to also scare his parents with. So then it's time to get cooking. And Franca tells us that she can't believe Kobe can even adjust to life in the U.S. because back in Cameroon, he loved to eat and he loved to eat traditional dishes. So then of course, Emily, like always, puts really high stakes on this. Making this dinner right is going to make his parents like me. And I need them to like me. Just super high stakes on this dinner. So later on, we see Kobe playing bubbles with his daughter and Dave and Lisa come by with some coffee. So Dave has been working on the list for the knock door ceremony, and he wants to run it by Kobe to make sure it's not like inappropriate. It's like a reasonable list. So his list is, he starts with a goat, a liter of palm oil, and Kobe was impressed with these two because he was like, yeah, this is the traditional things. Like, this is a goat.
I know. He's
like,
I'm thrilled it was a goat.
Palm oil, very good. He says, but also an umbrella because it's raining and they don't have one. And so and some African shirts. And so then Kobe's like, you know what? That's a good list. But you're missing one thing off that list. There's got to be a bride price. There has to be some monetary things too for the bride price. And Dave is like, well, how much should that be? And Kobe is incredibly unhelpful here and is like, I don't know. You like negotiate it. And it's like,
yeah, I was frustrated because
like, how do I know what's insulting? Like, something, I don't want it to be insultingly high or insultingly low. I don't know. Yeah. Is this like a $30 price or a $3,000? Like, what am I supposed to say? Like, what's a reasonable thing to start at the negotiation at? But anyway, we don't get to go into the negotiations there because Lisa just steps in and is like, I don't like this bride price thing. It feels like we're selling our daughter. So Dave doesn't really care. He's just like, whatever. It's a tradition here. We know we're not selling her. She lives with us. She's there. She has two kids with this guy. She's coming back to live with us. We are not selling her.
Yeah.
And then Kobe brings up how if they don't do it right and they don't have a bride price, then his ancestors will curse his family. And it's like he'll have a curse on his children and his grandchildren. And I don't want that. Lisa keeps on with it and keeps pushing until she asks Kobe, like, what happens if we don't name a bride price? And then he's like, then there won't be a wedding. Like, what are you talking about? So I guess, I mean, we're here. Who you on in terms of the two parents? Are we on Team Dave or Team Lisa here?
Team Dave.
Yeah,
I thought
for
it
sure.
was so cute that he like looked it up. Yeah. Right? He was like, oh, I looked to see what was like the traditional like registry kind of items, I guess, if you want to think about it that way. And I thought it was just really sweet. And I thought it was really funny how he's like, and an umbrella because we need one.
Yeah. I mean, it was, but that's just like the bare minimum I expect from people when they go to other cultures. At least Google it.
Like, right. And so, yeah, good job, Dave. And, you know, with her like saying, oh, yeah, you know, like it feels like we're selling our daughter. To me, it's like, OK, maybe the whole gift exchange like that kind of was the intention. Mm-hmm. But obviously that isn't really it. And then obviously at this point, there's other, like, you could liken it to other things. Like, it is tradition to give gifts at a wedding.
I thought the same thing. It's like, how different is this than just giving gifts at the wedding?
Right.
Like, yeah, for sure.
So it's like, just, I don't know, Mom. Like, don't be so uptight. And
Or the other way, the tradition that the bride's parents pay for the wedding.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty, like, patriarchal too, right? That's not that much different than, like, well, we're going to have to pay for this big party for everybody instead of just giving you the money directly.
Like, right. Yeah. And to me, it just feels like if you really have problems with the money, you don't have to keep it. And trust me, there are plenty of people in that family who would be fine with taking the money. Right. Just put it, give it to the kids. Like, that's fine.
Yeah. You can take the money and do whatever you want with it. Like, you could take the money and you could donate it to charity. Right. And and then it's like, you know, in lieu of a bride price. And if you want to do that, you could probably say, oh, well, we want our bride price paid to this charity. Yeah. Like, you know, and that would be that maybe that would make her feel better. I don't know. It just seems like it's not a actual selling transaction any more than a lot of other things is, any more than an engagement ring is, you know?
Yeah. So I don't know. I thought she was being a little, like, unnecessarily progressive for her.
Right. A little too woke.
Yeah. Unnecessarily so. Yeah. All right. Let's move on to our last couple, and that's Ed and Liz. So Liz is sitting at a coffee shop waiting for Ed after he agreed to meet up at a more appropriate location after the bar incident the last time we saw them. Liz doesn't want things to be over, and she wants to be with Ed. So she wants to fight for this. But she is scared that it could be over. Ed asks her how she's doing as Liz gets tears in her eyes. Ed says that he's been looking for an excuse to call off the wedding. He knows that they've both been married before and they don't want things to end in divorce, and he sees it going that way. Liz focuses on the fact that he should have told her first and not have found out through his friend/officiant. She says it was embarrassing, and he says that he doesn't always handle things well. He doesn't want to be with anyone else. He just wants to be single and work on his career. And Liz says then he'll find someone and then he'll be the best version of himself for someone else. She is stuck with him and helped make him a better version of himself. So she wants to be able to be with that person. She hates thinking of him with someone else. Ed assures her that he'll always be an asshole. He says he felt himself falling out of love with Liz and wanted to take the least painful approach. Ed says that there is time left on their lease and he wants to help figure things out. He tells her if he meets anyone like him to if she meets anyone like him to literally run. She covers her face and cries, saying she doesn't want to meet anyone else. Liz has given up a lot, and she says the hardest part is having to start over, and she has no other choice but to walk away. All right, so do you, like, believe Ed and what he's saying now? Because we definitely see, like, a Jekyll Hyde situation from him, like, where he'll just be, like, a colossal asshole, and then you'll get, like, moments where he's, like, actually seems like he cares, and this we kind of got the actually seems like he cares.
Yeah, and I mean, based on the previews we got a little bit, it sounds like massive assholes coming back next week.
Right.
But I thought that was true. I mean, he said it himself. It was like, rest assured, I'm always going to be an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, and that's
and why
true.
Doesn't she believe him?
It's just, and he can only put on the caring act or the caring mindset for so long.
Right.
And then eventually something's going to hit him and something's going to hit him wrong. Something's not going to land right. And he's going to just be a complete asshole. And that's all he's been on the show for a long time. And that's been the way he's been the entire time. And I imagine, I mean, he's in his mid 50s, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's been like that for that long. And he's right. And he's not going to change. And no matter how much all she can do by working on him and even getting the best self from him is just make it a little bit longer in between asshole outbursts. Like, that's mm-hmm. it. Like, and so it's one of those things that is, it's clearly she's hurt, but clearly this is also the best thing that could happen to her. She does not need to be with this guy.
No, she doesn't. And I feel like there is some element of he does need to be an asshole for her to realize that she shouldn't be with him.
Yeah.
It does in a weird way, I think, make it easier when you're broken up and they're acting mm-hmm. like a total jerk because you're like, it's a good reminder. Oh, yeah, you have the ability to be a jerk. Why would I want to be with someone
right.
like that?
Oh, right. This is why. This is what when things go. This is what things are like then. Right. I think it's funny, too, that she just extrapolates. So I was watching this with my partner and she mm-hmm. was like, you know, that's one of the worst things is when you try to fix somebody and you're working on this stuff. Mm-hmm. I need you to be like this. And then you break up and then they immediately are that everything you were trying to get them to be with somebody else. Right.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and everything you were working on, you were working on communication and they communicate with them great. And you were working on this, yeah. and they would do that with them great. And it's just like, what the hell? Why couldn't you do that for me? Right.
Right. Right.
Which does suck. But I just think it's interesting that she made up the whole second part of that story. Right. Where
yeah.
he's, oh, you're definitely going to find somebody else and turn into a completely different person that's great and is the best person.
Oh, no.
Like, no, he's not. He's not
no,
doing that.
He's
no,
he's not. He does not have the ability to do that. No, you're absolutely right. But I do think it is kind of a bummer thought. And I feel like I have had that same thought so many times because there was definitely a period of my life where the guys I would date and like more casually, it wasn't like I was in a serious relationship with them, not like Liz and Ed, you mm-hmm. know, but these guys I would casually date would literally be like, oh, I just can't be in a relationship with you. I need to just be single. And then they turn around and find the person that they were going to marry. And there was uh-huh. like at least four dudes that were like in a row where it was just like, am I cursed? Why are you turning around and finding your future wife? Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those things where it's hard not to take personally when that does happen to you, and it's very hard to take personally when it happens to you four times in a row.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where you have to realize it really is nothing about you, you know, it's about that person. And you know, and I, one way that kind of helped me through kind of that period, because I was like really down on myself because
sure.
I would be like, why is it, why am I not the marrying kind? Why are they like turning around and like finding the marrying kind? And it was really like, okay, well, you were not meant to be with this person. You guys weren't compatible. And they turned around and maybe it did help them to see that they were more compatible with someone else, but it really
sure.
has nothing to do with who I was as a person. It really just more so is who, you know, they were
no,
possibly
it's,
looking
it's,
for.
It's meshing and fitting together for sure.
Right.
It's not
right.
both of you. And it's just, and you're right. It's one of those things that when it does happen, it just is like, oh, oh, this is what it's supposed to be like. Okay.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I think in an ideal world, it would be so great to be like, if you just knew, like if everyone just knew, like at this age, like,
oh, yeah.
you're going to find gonna your at, person.
Yeah. You're
going right? to
meet him when you're 32. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Because like, right,
then if you're
32?
Liz and you're, what,
right.
29, you would be like, okay, I'm not even sweating this. Like, I know it's going to work out for me in the end. But I think it's really difficult when you're kind of going through these things because you don't know if it's going to work out in the end. And that causes you anxiety. It causes you to hold on for dear life with whatever asshole is hanging around and like kind of like lets you in a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's it's yeah. So boy, man, I just need less Ed. What have we done?
Yeah, God, I
mean,
I know.
This is the most self-aware Ed we've seen. So it
well,
wasn't even that bad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's like, okay, so and I feel like it's just something he said. I don't think he really thinks he is an asshole.
Maybe, but I think he legitimately understood that he's like, I can feel myself getting disinterested in this. And I know mm-hmm. that I'm going to very shortly just be a complete dick until it ends. Like, and so maybe I should just end it right now instead of being a dick until she ends it. Like,
yeah. I mean, he did recognize that he picked a fight and he did recognize that taco pasta is not the reason to call off a wedding. Right. So, I mean, at least he recognized that. All right. So it looks like based on our coming soon that we are going to see
yeah.
Angela and Michael at some point.
Yeah, so the working theory I was reading, at least on Reddit, is that She didn't get fired until after the tell-all was filmed. And so she's there. And yeah. So you can't really cut her out of the tell-all because, you know, if Angela's at a tell-all, you can't cut her out of the tell-all because she's going to be all up in everybody's shit. And
yeah.
Like, so they have to have some scenes with her, but I think they're going to try to keep them minimal.
Well, yeah.
But I'd rather not. That's cool. But
yeah
we're still going to get them.
All right. So we did not see Nicole and Mahmood today, but out of the group that we did see, who was your student of the week?
I'll just say Lauren because she made me laugh.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even appreciate the surgery. I don't appreciate her agreeing to have the surgery on the screen. I was like, you could have signed something that said they couldn't do that. And then I wouldn't have had to watch it.
But right. Well,
yeah. She's at least funny.
Yeah. No, she was hilarious. I'll go with Alexi. Poor dude. Like,
yeah.
Oh, there's toast. And even if that was for him, what a sad meal.
Yeah.
He's just sitting there starving.
He's just sitting there starving.
Being supportive.
And like, she could have done. I feel like if she ordered the food for herself, she probably could have gotten Alexi something and been like, oh yeah, there's something for you too.
Yeah, I know. All right. Yeah. All right. Oh, what about your dunce?
I'll go with Manuel. I think he was just being intentionally obtuse and intentionally nasty just to egg her. I think he was angry at her for being angry and just was like egging her on and just like poking her with a stick and just being like more and more angry. Especially like at the end there, he's like, oh, I'm allowed to come with you now. Like just intentionally being an asshole just to make his partner more angry.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Patrick, as short-lived as their segments were. Like, come on. You got to spend the night with your wife if it's her birthday and not leave her with all the caregiving.
Right? I mean, you think you're going to get laid on the birthday, right? You have to at least do that.
Yeah. Well, maybe not. All right. What about your life lesson?
So my life lesson is that we've seen it both ways, and you can't get it both ways in terms of this. You can't say, tell the people when they come to America, well, you're in America. You have to respect American traditions.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're in another country, be like, well, I don't like your traditions. I'm an American and I'm not going to participate in those. Like, you don't get both ways. You could do one or two of those things, but not both.
Yeah, that is a good point. Okay, so my life lesson is for Liz. You can't, harp too much on the potential of someone if they are not a good partner now.
Yeah.
That's what you should focus on, right? Because she's just like, well, he has all this potential. He's going to go out and be the best partner to someone else. Who cares?
Right.
Like,
you can't.
He's not a good partner now. So why are you wasting your time?
You can't. This is get the CS thing. You can't judge every algorithm on its best case.
Right.
You have to use typical case. Like,
right. Or worst case in this
matter. Or worst case, yeah.
Yeah.
Depending on,
well, kind of same for Ed, right? His worst and his typical are kind of the
pretty,
same.
They're pretty close. Yeah, pretty close.
Yeah. All right. So we will be back again with this group next week.
Yep, we will.
Okay. So until then.
All right. See everybody then.
All right.
Okay.
Bye. Good.